Welcome to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. In the second supervisorial district in Ukiah, California, the seat of government for Mendocino County and the seat of Radio Curious, the incumbent supervisor, Jim Wattenberger, has chosen not to run. And in this edition of Radio Curious, we'll be visiting with the two immediate predecessors, Richard Shoemaker and Frank McMichael. They both represented the city of Ukiah in the Mendocino County Board of Supervisors for 8 years. Shoemaker defeated McMichael 12 years ago. Today we'll be talking about politics in the 2nd District. So Richard Shoemaker and Frank McMichael, welcome to Radio Curious.
Good morning.
Hey, Barry.
Can one of you give me your thoughts on the state of politics in the 2nd District, considering that Jim Wattenberger will not be running?
Well, let's describe the district first. It's the city of Ukiah with probably about 3,000 people that live just south of the city of Ukiah. It's 6.5 square miles out of a 3,500 square mile county.
And it has one vote on the Board of Supervisors made up of 5 different people.
That's correct.
I would say the state of the politics is extremely dynamic. I mean, obviously, with Supervisor Wattenberger deciding not to rerun and 4 announced candidates, you have a fairly large field and interest in the position as well as the issues related to the position.
Do you have any conjecture or perhaps inside knowledge as to why Jim Wattenberger chose not to run?
Well, I don't know that I can speak for him, but I have a sense, which is similar to mine. It is a very wearying and demanding job, and at some point in time you wonder if it's worth the effect on your personal life. As an example, you indicated that Richard defeated me in when I held that position for my reelection process. The interesting part of that, there was 3 of us up for election at that point in time. Liz Henry, who chose not to run, Seiji Sugawara, up to the last minute, was looking for somebody else to run, and myself, who did not want to run, but at the end decided to. All 3 of us either were unelected or bowed out.
Richard, how about you? Any insights as to why Jim Wattenberger chose not to run?
Well, I think there's been a lot of turmoil at the county with the changeover, with Jim coming on, with John Pinches replacing Hal Wagonette, with going through a couple of CEOs in that period of time, with, I think, a turnover of over 50% of the department heads, and I believe all of the elected department heads. And then throw in the major planning issues that have come down the pike. I think it's a pretty stressful and strenuous job. I think Jim has been pulled in a number of directions by constituents and people who want things. He just might have had enough.
The characterization of Jim is that he is more conservative than some of the people in the city of Ukiah. Jim Mulheron is running. He might be characterized similarly compared to the 3 other candidates. With the 1 week that is open now, it closes on Friday, March 14th, another person can sign up to run. Do you have any ideas if there may be another person?
I've heard rumors that Doug Crane was considering it, but I've never confirmed that with him.
Doug Crane's the mayor of Ukiah.
Correct.
I was told the other day that Doug has now thrown his support into John McGowan's camp, and okay. He won't run. But I was hoping that after this session today that Frank and I would both go down and file and make it very interesting.
No, thanks.
Well, let me ask a question that maybe both of you could quickly define. Frank, you're a registered Republican, and Richard, you're a registered Democrat.
That's correct.
What's the difference, Frank, between a Republican and a Democrat?
Very little at the party level, quite a bit, I suppose, at some levels. I guess I need to hasten to add that I'm a registered Republican by inertia. I became a Republican after being a Democrat, and I'm equally fed up with both parties. So I would suspect that my leanings as far as attitude would go towards a libertarian green viewpoint. As far as the difference at the local level, there probably isn't any real difference if you're talking about concerns about community and what we are to be as a community and those kinds of things. If you get into national issues, taxes, war in Iraq, and so forth, I think there's a fairly significant difference. The opposition of the war in Iraq is primarily, well, I need to back up on that. It's not even primarily a Democratic issue. It's become a Republican issue, and I think you can see that by the fact that Dennis Hastert's congressional seat was won by a Democrat that was primarily in a Republican stronghold.
And Dennis Hastert is the former Speaker of the House of Representatives.
Correct. And his seat was won by an anti-war candidate. So there's a lot of anti-war attitude, I think, across party at this point in time.
Richard, the difference between Republicans and Democrats?
Well, Frank was, I think, correct. In a local level, at times it seems pretty nebulous, a difference. Definitely we're going to be seeing one at the national level in the presidential race. I think, you know, it's interesting, Mike Thompson, our congressman, is a conservative Democrat. He's very fiscally conservative, but socially he was more of a typical Democrat. Focusing on the state, I think Republicans are much more strident about no new taxes, no new fees, cut the programs, and Democrats in that level tend to be more defined by the want to raise some taxes to cover the programs they don't seem to be wanting to cut.
Let's focus on the current supervisorial election. There'll be a primary the first week in June of this year. What do you feel are the critical issues for the candidates to address? Some of them we know are the proposed shopping center north of town. Some of them could be the grading ordinance that we still don't have since before you were on the board, Frank. What are some of the others?
Well, I think that the overriding issue is the growth and development issue. What we're going to be when we grow up, and of course the Ukiah Valley Area Plan is a key component of that. My sense is that there is an isolation between the efforts of the Ukiah Valley Area Plan and the city of Ukiah, which is the District 2, essentially the District 2. And the subsidiary issues associated with that planning process is the ability to serve water, wastewater, those kinds of things.
I want to talk about your role as the director of LAFCO and explain what that is. But first, Richard, any other opinions on the issues?
As happens, it seems like every 10 years when the state goes in the trash can financially, it starts making moves at counties. We'll give you this job to do and give you money to do it. I think that the counties need to resist that, because every time that occurs, the counties end up on the short end financially. I think the issues that Frank has mentioned are very important. I think getting a direction for the county is going to be very, very important, because I don't see a direction for this county other than the scramble to fill the coffers of the county. And to me, that may define the biggest issue for supervisors. Is they're on the board of directors of a big organization. They're responsible for running it right. But they're also responsible for all the people they represent and the needs of that organization, such as sales tax revenue and other revenues, should not take precedent over the needs of the community. I think that's an important issue they need to talk about.
The needs come before raising money.
The needs of the community versus the needs of the County of Mendocino organization financially.
Let's talk about the Local Agency Formation Commission. Frank, you're the executive director of LAFCO, is that right?
Correct.
And Richard, you're a member.
Yes, I represent special districts.
What does that organization do? What's its purpose, and how is it woven in to our community?
LAFCO has three primary responsibilities. One is its traditional role as a boundary commission. So if you want to form a district or incorporate an area into a city or change the boundaries of an existing district or city, LAFCO provides a process for that. The second role is this legislature says that one of the primary responsibilities of LAFCO is to protect open space and agricultural land, see that services are provided efficiently, and prevent urban sprawl. The way LAFCO goes about doing that is via setting spheres of influence for the various agencies, and those spheres represent potential growth area for those agencies. And the third thing is a review or performance of the provision of services, and that's done through a municipal service review, which is also used to set the sphere of influence for those agencies.
You want to add anything to that, Richard?
It all sounds very kind of complex, especially the last item, but it's really a basic thing. It's to assure that the folks that live in districts and cities and the county are be able to be served by those agencies, such as a water district that either doesn't have right-sized piping or even enough water. They need to be examined to see if they can serve new folks in the area or serve the people that they currently serve.
It sounds like one of those government agencies that would put a listener to sleep when they hear a description of it. How is it important to the people who live in the Ukiah Valley or Mendocino County on a day-to-day basis? Why should we pay attention?
On any given day, it wouldn't be important because the kind of actions or decisions being made at that time are not operational issues. They're larger policy or larger responsibilities that reflect greater decisions than day-to-day operational issues, exceptions being at some point in time whether a boundary is being changed.
If I may, the term larger policy concerns me because if it's a group that is made up by appointees as opposed to elected individuals, correct?
They're all elected, but they're appointed by their bodies
to be on this commission.
Right.
So if it's larger policy issues, those larger policy issues may have a significant underlying effect, hidden effect perhaps, on those of us who live here. Am I right?
You would be right, but they don't occur on a daily basis. As an example, a study to decide to set a sphere for an agency may take that process may take 18 months or more. So while there is staff-level work going on, the commission is not making those kinds of decisions on a consistent, regular
basis.
What
would be an example of some of those decisions?
Well, an example would be...
Recently, a really minor one was the city of Fort Bragg annexed an area called Pomo Bluffs Park. It was a county area that the city developed as parkland. I don't know how long that took to go through, but that's a minor policy,
right,
if anything.
Right. It's fairly minor compared to an impact, as an example, allowing the Masonite property to annex to a water agency.
You're listening to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Richard Shoemaker and Frank McMichael, since you were both members of the Board of Supervisors, I would like your thoughts on what is necessary and perhaps is it possible for the board to be a functional community-serving group. And I'll editorialize a moment. From my observation, from having closely observed the boards of supervisors in this county beginning in November of 1974, the current board is not very functional, not very together as a group. What are your thoughts?
When you're talking about working together, if you mean treating each other with courtesy and civility and appropriate behavior, I think that is simply a decision and choice of each person that represents whatever district. If you mean by that working together, everybody being on the same page and agreeing to having the same opinion and the same vote about an issue, I don't think that's ever going to happen, and I don't think it's necessarily a good thing if it did happen.
How would you characterize the current board in those two aspects?
I've watched this current board over the last year or two really work, I think, at treating each other professionally, at least in public. I don't know what goes on behind. There's a clear undertone of divergent opinion or animosity associated with divergent opinion. If two people are strongly held positions or passionate about it, but they're diametrically opposed, you can expect there's going to be some heat between them. And that's just the way it is.
Richard?
Yeah, I think that it's been really difficult for this board to come to a compromise and consensus, for that matter. And I think if the board were able to put itself in a position to get to some serious agreements about, you know, what do they agree about, and get the county set up in a direction towards some of those agreements, that would work. I think there's a lot of stuff that gets held over emotionally and politically right now, from issue to issue, that is not good for the counties in general.
I think that's probably an accurate observation, and I've watched that, and I serve as a planning commissioner, city council member, and so forth. I've watched that kind of process, and you really, 5 years as a planning commission, is one of the things I had to learn, is to not take agenda item A, emotional response, and move it to agenda item B, kind of thing.
Right.
And it is a strong learning and difficult learning process.
I think one of the things that's important is when people are elected, and this is going to your questions that you're going to have for supervisor candidates, is not that that they first mouth and hopefully stick to it, is a concept of going in and trying to work as a group together, trying to get in a positive mode together. It sounds kind of touchy-feely, but it can make all the difference in the world. And I think good planning sessions with, again, agreements for staff, what they can work on and should work on, are part of that. And I would hope that any new board would put that together. I think you can look at your supervisor now or try to get a history of somebody running. How have they been in a quote, cooperative effort when they have disagreements with people? And how have they gotten half a loaf? I mean, I worked with Charles Pearson for 2 years, and he was on the left end of the spectrum, and he was great at getting a half a loaf for what he wanted. His constituents, I don't think, appreciated that, but he was good at it.
And that's an important point, is that your constituents tend to want to pull you to extreme positions, because usually the most passionate about an issue are the most vocal, and that's who you hear from. We also forget that a lot of times, both city council, board of supervisors, etc., there's a lot of things they agree on that there's no heat about, that to just move forward and get it done. And what we hear and notice is when they don't do that. And we tend to identify that's how they do everything. And that wouldn't be accurate.
From your experiences, what advice would you give the current board and future board members? There is a possibility that there will be three new members in January in the next session.
Study, work, you know, cross the aisle. And if you can do anything, have coffee with the person that you most feel that you're most opposed to as far as viewpoints, generalized philosophical viewpoints. Spend time with them. Try to understand why they're coming from the direction they're coming from. And if even if you don't agree, at least you understand their perspective.
I think it's really good advice. I know that at boards prior to Frank and I, that they went out and had lunch together. And they didn't necessarily talk about the topics, but they tried to be social and civil in that kind of situation. I think that's fallen away at the state level and federal level as well.
Well, I remember in the 70s and 80s, the five board members regularly met for lunch on Tuesday, and anyone who was interested
could join them. Yeah.
Now, I haven't seen that happen for 25 years or so.
Yeah, it's very polarized to that degree. As I, you know, in the 8 years I was there, there was three of us that came on brand new that first year, and for a period of time we were able to do that. But the animosity just grew, and I think it only got worse and over time, and it has stayed, and even to the point you get comments by board members that, well, you know, this is the way it's going to be because I got three.
Why the animosity?
Hard to answer. When I was on the board, we had two major issues. One having to do with finances. Liz Henry, Seiji Sugawara, and I were pretty well paired up, if that's the right word, on trying to address that issue. And yet we were at odds with each other over another major issue, which was local timber rules. And you have to learn that, look, if you're going to go over here in this arena where you have some agreement and a chance to move forward in agreement, you've got to let go of whatever emotional response you have where you're disagreeing. And it is a difficult experience. The more maturity you can bring to the position, the more world experience, the more age, if you will, the better. But it still has to be learned on the job.
Do you think that the listeners should take that as a comment on maturity or the lack thereof of the current board?
That wasn't what I was trying to say. I think that I know it's easy to default to irritation or anger or some other negative kind of emotion because you can't persuade someone. So to the degree that you do default to that, that's probably not a very mature response. But I think that the isolation that occurs as you begin to say, that person doesn't think or act like me, so I'm not going to associate with them, intensifies the separation. So working not to be separate, but working to understand is primary.
How does that dovetail into the Brown Act requirement that says board business has to be done in public? And that's taken by some to mean that you can't really pal around and talk issues with more than one other board member when the board is made up of five people.
I think what I've seen is that people do pal around, and you see two supervisors go to lunch and two go to lunch over here, and it's always the same two to go to lunch together.
That's what I'm referring to.
Well, that's legal with two.
But how about with talking with someone with whom you have a difference of opinion, as Frank is saying?
Well, I think you have to talk in a more philosophical nature, not necessarily trying to tally up votes on a particular topic. Or, okay, this is what's important to you, this is what's important to me. How can we work with each other to not necessarily, you know, shoot each other in the room? But I think those things are important, and I think they are doable, and I don't believe you have to get into a Brown Act violation to do that.
Now, I agree. I think that, yes, there is some potential if you're not careful, but the reality is that, as your book question, you know, it's interesting that Richard's comment about reading a book about longitude, that gives me an insight. I never would have thought of that as one of his areas of interest. Once you associate and understand with people, you just get a different perspective of them. That's critical.
Another thing that the board or new supervisors need to think about is the counties went through a change a couple of years ago where they changed from a CAO form, which is a head administrator, but all the department heads work for the Board of Supes, to a CEO system where all the department heads now work for the head administrator, and that the Board of Supes is supposed to be a policy-making body and not necessarily a minutia management body or a you know, direct influence. And I think that the board figuring out a way to set goals for the CEO and the organization rather than trying to run around and go particularly to different departments to get what they need, it is a good thing to create trust and understanding between everybody. And it's a good message for the staff.
Contacts with the media are all now directed through one person. Do you think that's a good idea, considering that it's a small county? Or should the media be able to go to the people who they want to, who work for the county?
If it's saying we want to make sure that we're all speaking from the same page on an issue, I suppose I understand that. But to suggest that anyone that had any position in the county could not speak to the media, I would be very opposed to that.
I think that a message control by having a single point can be beneficial to organizations so people don't get disparate messages. And I think in an organization that has as many new people and troublesome situations, I can totally understand why the county wants to have that single point of contact. I do believe it's not the best thing, though. I think that the department head deferring to a single person over here puts it in the hands of somebody that may not have all the subtleties of the information.
And as a curious person, I want to know if the position that is being expounded is that of the speaker, or does it include all of the divergent points of view of the government organization, which ought to be transparent?
Well, should be transparent, but there's a certain amount of skill that has to be developed in making a presentation at any public venue. And if you don't have that skill or you don't have the complete information, then you can get misrepresentation and misunderstanding.
One of the issues that I think I've always talked about, and the UVAP was an attempt at doing in the past, is creating more interaction between the County of Mendocino and its incorporated cities.
Like the city of Ukiah, which some people say might have been ignored by the current board with regard to the Ukiah Valley Area Plan.
Absolutely. I mean, you've got Willits Fort Bragg and Point Arena. They all are anchors of certain parts of this county. The more that they share information, the more they share services, the more they share planning, the better, I believe, for the county and the residents of the county.
I have a hard time understanding how you can create an area plan in isolation of either the city's circumstances or the districts that provide services surrounding the city. I just can't understand how you can do that and not account for all of their circumstance needs and so forth.
From your perspective, to what extent are those needs being isolated from the Ukiah Valley Area Plan?
I think they're being essentially ignored. As a matter of fact, one of the planners that worked for them, when I raised this kind of issue, said, it's our job to plan. It's the job of the service provision agencies to provide the services for our plan. And if they have to raise fees or borrow money to do it, then that's what they need to do.
You're referring to someone in the county planning department who
Correct.
Said that?
That's part of the UVAP process.
And now that I serve in a special district board, I very much understand the problems in that. I mean, I asked early on in the most recent UVAP process that they bring special district representation to the table in regard to the planning process. It wasn't followed through with. So you have a fire district, you have five or six water districts that haven't had the input into that plan that's necessary. And I would also say that if you don't bring them in for input, you got to have the information such as their service reviews to use in the plan.
Well, Frank McMichael, Richard Shoemaker, thanks for being with us on Radio Curious.
Thanks a lot, Barry.
Glad to be here.
Richard Shoemaker and Frank McMichael are both former members of the Mendocino County Board of Supervisors representing the city of Ukiah. This interview actually turned into a two-part series, so join us next week when we discuss the necessary governmental steps to approve the proposed shopping mall at the old Masonite property and hear their thoughts about what they've learned in the past year and their suggestions for an interesting book. Copies of this and other editions of Radio Curious can be found on our website, www.radiocurious.org. There are over 750 archives on our website, radiocurious.org, and I'm honored to tell you that Radio Curious is now part of the collection at the Library of Congress. We appreciate your cards, ideas, and letters, and do enjoy hearing from you. The email is curious@radiocurious.org. The postal address is 700 West Smith Street, Ukiah, California, 95482. The phone is 707-621-5075. Ignacio Ayala is the assistant producer. I'm host and producer, Barry Vogel. Thank you for listening.